sports, politics, life. Amazing Garage Floors presents Kevin Keatsman Has Issues, online at AmazingGarageFloors.net.
There aren't many people around Kansas City following the daily ins and outs with the Kansas City Royals as they just continue to have a terrible season, one for the ages. And we're not going to do that here today. We did want to catch up with our great friend Ryan Lefevre to talk about a couple of bigger picture issues with the Royals moving forward. Before we get too far into football season, because I sense that football is going to hit, and if you thought the Royals were kind of an afterthought before football season, well, you know what happens afterwards. So we can't wait to speak with our good friend Ryan Lefevre. He'll be joining us in just a couple of moments, so stay tuned for that. I did think it's important that we talk about a couple of issues, and one is the future of the club. We saw John Sherman do a series of media interviews this week talking about what it is that they're going to do before the end of this season. In fact, as they go forward, and he has said they've done a tremendous amount over the last 11 months with J.J. Piccolo, the new general manager, and things that they've done that people can't really touch, see, feel, smell, whatever right now, because they're things that take time. And this is an evaluation season, and he's as disgusted as anyone else that they're losing. It was all part of him putting out a two-page letter this week about a potential new ballpark for the Kansas City Royals. And I think I'm the only person that continues to say potential new ballpark. The letter confirms once again that the Royals are coming up with private funds for $1 billion worth of entertainment and infrastructure around a ballpark that they will own and operate and theoretically make money on forever as a real estate play, as a long-term investment, potentially as a different corporation set up that if they ever sold the team, they would still own the entertainment and the real estate around it. It could all be set up that way if that's what John Sherman and his investors decide to do, a completely separate business, and it makes sense. It is something that I'll tell you right now I would invest in. I would gladly invest into that if they would allow me in. I'd love to invest in the billion-dollar development around the ballpark, especially if it's a separate company from the Kansas City Royals, because theoretically they could just hold it forever or sell it off to another entity and make a profit. There'd be all kinds of options, but there would be no threat that the baseball team is going anywhere because there would be a long-term lease with the county, with the city, with whatever entity is that builds the ballpark. So anytime you have those public-private deals, you wind up making money. And I think the Royals see that and know that, and I like that part of this deal. But we still don't know the math on building the stadium. When we talk to Ryan, we'll ask him, are there any other taxes in Jackson County other than the 3/8 cent sales tax continuing? Because that tax cannot generate enough money to build a ballpark. There's no way possible that can generate enough money to build a ballpark. They're threatening to move across the river into North Kansas City, which is Clay County. And if they do that, maybe Clay County puts something on the ballot this year that raises $500-700 million for the Royals. And maybe that county decides over the course of however many years that would take to pay those bonds off or whatever, it becomes a great value for that county because the tax increase of what the ballpark and the ballpark village do. That's all fair game. And I think that right now it feels to me like that's where that's headed. And it could be a great boon just across the river from downtown and something completely different than being close to the P&L and Crossroads, which are pretty nice downtown entertainment districts the way they are. I think we all recognize that. This would be a new destination if it were north of the river. If it's my baseball team, I'd be seriously looking at that. The one thing I can't really grasp here is how you build the stadium across the river with a view of the skyline for the fans. If you do that, you're almost certainly staring into the sun almost every night, and I just don't know how they're going to pull that off. So I think geographically there's some problems. You'd want to build the ballpark to the west of downtown in a perfect world and have the view of the skyline, and neither one of these locations is that. So there's nothing perfect about this. It's clearly, the impetus for all of this is the village around it and the private investment and the capital being put in by the Royals there and new revenue, which some estimate could put the Royals' payroll up to about $150 million a year if they did that and if it were the same company, which we won't know until the end. They can say what they're doing now, but until the entities are formed and the thing is a go, we don't know. There could be all kinds of switcheroos. Remember, we were pretty much promised like a hockey team or an NBA team when we built Sprint Center, now T-Mobile Center, and that didn't happen. So until all the contracts come out, you just don't really know. What bothers me here is Sherman's letter was, I briefly mentioned this on the podcast on Wednesday, it was 2 pages long, and he seems like Some of the things that he tries to do are from an era gone by. I don't know who he's trying to reach with a two-page letter. It's nice that he's communicating. It was a really nice sentiment, but it started out talking about Nancy Houser and running into her at the ballpark and Dick Houser being the manager in 1985 and Bo Jackson bobblehead night. And I'm thinking, wow, this guy's opening this letter about a new ballpark, about things that were happening 30 or 40 years ago. And I didn't quite get that. The grasp here is not something that I couldn't grasp it. I'll just be honest with you. I think what fans would want to hear is the sense of urgency. We have a chance as a city to do something dynamic. We have a chance to have a better baseball team. We can do all this in one fell swoop if we do this project, and here's the vision. And then you state it in three or four bullet points, and you move on. But they didn't. They tried to get detailed about a lot of the finances of this, but they were really bizarre financial points. He says there's going to be 2.8 total economic input or output on this project. Well, how can you build a $2 billion stadium and entertainment district and the total economic output is $2.8 billion? Are you telling me that the workers down there building this thing are going to eat $800 million worth of lunches? I'm not sure that I understand. I mean, these numbers look great. I always question these numbers when I see them. Like the World Cup thing coming, I really question. And again, I need to state emphatically, I am for a new ballpark. I think Kauffman Stadium is a thing from the past. I think it's in the wrong location. I am all for a new stadium. But I haven't had a proposal put in front of me for how much money you want from me, a taxpayer, or residents of Jackson or Clay or the state of Missouri, to do this. And until we see that, I don't know how anybody can form an opinion on whether this is the right thing or the wrong thing. The headline of the two-page letter from John Sherman was quite simply, we're going to decide by the end of September which location. Then we're going to go forward with those officials, and hopefully we'll get more details down the road and maybe a vote in the spring for more tax money or whatever it's going to be. I'm not really sure that I know. Now, keep in mind, you must ignore the rest of the media. This is why you listen to this podcast. I'm telling you, you got to ignore it. Question it when the Royals say it, and question authorities in charge. We are a year ago, right now, in the middle of a baseball season, and the World Cup's coming to Kansas City, and all I can remember was everybody in the media saying, this is unbelievable, we're going to have a new ballpark built for the Royals and the World Cup in Kansas City at the same time. We'll have this showpiece and this entertainment district and all this cool stuff by 2026 when the World Cup is here. We have no chance of that. I was the only person in this town last year that said, that's a joke. 2030's the target. If you get it done before 2030, that's great. The lease expires in 2030. We could sit here in the past. It's taken, we've seen votes fail. And then you have to circle back and vote again next year. Fix the plan, make it better, find some more money. Maybe there's some Biden bucks involved here. I'd be going for that. If I were the Royals, I'd be trying to find out if there's some sort of, you know, economic stimulus money out there. The Inflation Reduction Act. Is there anything that they can get their hands on that doesn't require us to pay more than the feds have already spent? Are there federal dollars? We don't know that. Nobody's asked the question. Certainly nobody's answered the question. So I still have more questions than answers on this entire project, but I'm for it. Make no mistake about it. I'm for it. I just can't say yes until I know what they're asking of us. We got to see the dollars. We got to see what the vote is. We have to know the actual numbers before we can say, is this a good deal for Kansas Cityans or whatever county you live in or whatever state you live in? Is this a good deal or is it not? And I just don't have those answers yet. Ryan's going to join us in a moment. He's got a lot more insight on that and so many other things that we'll talk about in broadcasting. And we have a great discussion toward the end here. I'm going to ask Ryan about the haunted hotel in Milwaukee. Do you remember this story? Mookie Betts earlier this year, when they went to Milwaukee to play the Brewers, he rented an Airbnb and didn't stay with his teammates at the Pfister Hotel because it is said to be haunted. There are more haunted stories. Brent Rooker of the A's said he had some incidents in June this year. Ryan LaFever has stayed there. Major League Baseball's haunted hotel is one of our discussions as well, so we're looking forward to that. It's all brought to you by Roberts Robinson, Chevrolet Buick GMC. I spoke with Mike Robinson yesterday on the phone at great length. He now has more folks purchasing new vehicles from him by ordering exactly how they want it than by either locating it, having it brought in, or having it on the lot. And he loves it, because the customers are so happy. You're getting exactly what you want. You get every possible discount in advance when you make the deal. You put a small deposit down. They send it off to the factory and they build your car. When it arrives, if you don't like it, if it's not everything you thought it was, you don't have to buy it. They'll put it on the lot and sell it to someone else. But man, is this, I did this. I was one of the first people to do this a couple of years ago. I did it with my Chevy Blazer. It is the only way to buy a car. Get exactly like you like it. You got a couple months while they're building it to plan exactly how you're going to do it, whether you're financing it or any of these things. Roberts Robinson, Chevrolet Buick GMC, will help you with Chevrolet Find New Roads. Just call this number and ask for Tim. He'll walk you through the entire process. 816-826-1563. It is so simple to get the vehicle of your choice, exactly how you like it, at the home of the lifetime warranty, robertsrobinson.com. 360 Document Solutions. The reason Mike called me is he just bought some copiers and printers from 360 Document Solutions. He said we needed some new equipment here at the dealership, and man, these guys at 360 are phenomenal. He said the customer service was outstanding. I said I knew it would be. So 360 Document Solutions is working with our friends at Roberts Robinson. We love that. We love it when our sponsors get together and are able to do business together, but your business can also do business with 360 and find out what customer service is all about, because they set the standard for customer service in this industry. If you have a problem with your equipment, they get their folks on it right away. No talking to somebody in Guatemala or India trying to figure out what you're going to do next. 360documentsolutions.com. And here's something novel. You can pick up the phone and call the owner of the company and get this thing started. Call Mark at 913-745-5344 and find out what service is all about with the machines at your office. And Back 9 Development is Kansas City's custom home builder. TJ Volkanskis would love to work with you on your dream home. New home building is booming right now. Resale's not so hot, but the new home industry is on fire. If you're looking to build something new, whether it's a new home or a new business office or an addition to where you already are, maybe you have some land and you're building something else there, maybe at the lake, a boathouse down by the lake, all kinds of things. Custom building. You have a project, he builds it. Back9development.com. Kansas City, Topeka, Manhattan, Lawrence, anywhere. Back9development.com. 785-236-0161 for my man TJ Vilkanskis at Back9development.com. Okay, a lot to talk about in the world of baseball, not specific to the Royals, but this is going to be fun. You know, Ryan and I, first of all, are you watching on TV this year or can you even get the games? The Arizona Diamondbacks and the San Diego Padres have already lost their contracts with Bally Sports, taken it in-house with Major League Baseball, and they're actually reaching now four times as many homes in Phoenix and San Diego as they did when they were with Bally Sports. Don't know where the Royals are headed with this. Don't know the future of it. We're going to ask Ryan about that, the ballpark, the Haunted Hotel, and so much more right now on KKHI. Hit it!
The KKHI Conversation is brought to you by Fry Orthodontics, where your smile is just the start. Online at fryorthodontics.com.
It's always just great to have Ryan Lefevre on the podcast to talk all things baseball, broadcasting, and probably a little bit about life. We have a tendency to do that here. Hello, Ryan. How are you, buddy? Everything good?
I'm good, Kevin. It's good to hear your voice.
Okay, well, we got a homestand coming up here. We've got the Twins and the Mets coming to town, six games over the next week at Kauffman Stadium. But there's a lot of other things going on around the baseball season. And one of the things that I picked up on last week and wanted to get a hold of you on was what happened with the Arizona Diamondbacks and their broadcasting partner, which is Bally Sports, which you have, or we have here in Kansas City as well. But it basically defaulted, and Major League Baseball took this thing in, and the Diamondbacks seem to be doing well with that. I don't know where everything's headed with the broadcasts, with streaming, with services and whatnot. I just want to get your 30,000-foot view, buddy, on what you see in your industry right now and where you think baseball is headed maybe for local broadcasting in the future.
Well, I hope it's headed to a model that favors the Royals, just being selfish, because they're – is such a disparity in local television income. And I know that's hard to grasp because Kansas City fans can say, well, the Chiefs are doing great, and they are. But the Chiefs have a model where really all they have to do is just manage their organization well, because finances are not as big of an issue as it is in Major League Baseball. I mean, I think the Dodgers receive somewhere near $200 million more than we do in television income. I mean, it's just a very hard model to manage. And some teams have been very creative, like Tampa Bay. But by and large, it's not just a small market cry. It's a reality. So I'm just rooting for whatever's best for the Royals. And if that means that, you know, somewhere down the road that Major League Baseball is able to acquire more local television rights and that money is pooled and it's divided more evenly, that's what I want. I do believe, though, that our particular region, which is, you know, we refer to it as Bally Sports Kansas City, but it's Bally Sports Midwest, which includes the Cardinals and the Blues and the Pacers. I've heard, and I'm definitely not a spokesman for the company. This is just whispers that are coming and going because everyone within our region is wondering what's going to happen. But I think our region is a pretty profitable one. And if Bally's or Sinclair, the parent company, or Diamond Sports, which is the offshoot of Sinclair that's handling all the sports regional networks, if they want to stay in the business, I think this is a region that they would like to keep because it's a profitable one and they have the rights to the Royals streaming. So if you're a Royals fan, you're just used to being able to use the Bally Sports app and watch the games by way of streaming. But that's not the case with all the other Bally regions.
Right.
And I don't know the ins and outs of all of that, but there are Bally regions. And I was just in one of them earlier this week when we were in Cleveland that, you know, they have the rights to the Guardians games on cable and satellite and whatever, but they don't have the exclusive streaming rights. So it's very complicated in that way too, that not every Bally's market is the same.
So in San Diego and Arizona this season, Bally defaulted. And what happened was MLB Network or Major League Baseball was ready for this to happen. And through whatever they went out and then did, they quadrupled the number of people in San Diego and Phoenix that can see their team play now, which says an awful lot about people that have left cable or they're, you know, consuming in a different way or however it may be. And I'm not picking on Bally here in any way, shape, or form. I just wonder, when I read that they actually quadrupled the number of homes that can get the Diamondbacks and the Padres games in season, if maybe that isn't the future model. Maybe instead of having partners, maybe Major League Baseball should do this all themselves. Now, the real trouble is, as you say, the Dodgers, the Yankees, the Red Sox make so much more money off their local broadcasting rights than the Royals and teams like the Royals that I don't know that those owners would ever go with this. But I don't understand why MLB Network doesn't just take over the whole thing and they can control it by zip code, which game you get every night. And everybody knows where baseball is played all the time. And every night the Royals are on, and we live in here in Kansas City, it would be the Royals game. Is there a chance they could nationalize the thing?
I think they would like to. I think that's the model that they would like to have. The problem they face right now is they just simply don't have the rights to their own entities. I mean, you have, AT&T Sports, you have the NBC Sports Channel, Comcast or whatever, and you have the Bally's, and I'm probably missing one or two. So their rights, even though it's their product, their rights belong to other entities. And Major League Baseball, by way of those rights, if you buy the MLB package where you can watch any game and you can listen to any announcers. So, you know, when we're playing the Twins and you live in Wyoming and you can choose, do I want to watch the Royals? Do I want to watch the Twins? Do I want to listen on radio? Do I want to listen on TV? I mean, it's great, but then there's blackout issues, and that's just part of the arrangement between the rights holders and Major League Baseball, that if you are in the region, you mentioned zip code, if you plug your zip code and that's part of your subscription through MLB, if they're at home, those games are going to be blacked out as opposed to watching them on cable or satellite. And what's happened in Arizona and what's happened in San Diego is one of the advantages is that now Major League Baseball, since they have the rights, they can write their own rules, and they have lifted the blackouts, which of course the fans like. But the great unknown is how will local fans pay to watch their teams by using the app, because we've been in this rights fees model for so long with cable and satellite and whatever, and with all the cord cutting and people, you know, going to streaming. And a lot of the complaints about streaming now is they've been able to watch games free on, you know, different platforms. And now with the negotiations between the rights holders and those platforms, that people aren't getting those games anymore. But the great unknown is, it seems to make sense that if you had a, you know, a central rights holder and the blackouts are lifted and more people can watch him, how Major League Baseball and these rights holders are going to be compensated for that is still an unknown, because you don't just have those blanket cable fees anymore, satellite fees. That's the part of the model that I think a lot of people have confidence in, but there's no history.
Yeah. I think it's a fascinating time in broadcasting. And we know this, live sports works, man. That's the one thing that remains. Live sporting events are the motherlode, basically, of the industry. Everybody wants live sports because people watch. And it's obviously a big deal. I think of the Royals and the Royals' future, and I think there's an exposure issue here too. And obviously, you want to get as much money as you can from your broadcast rights. It benefits your organization that way. I feel like I hear from a lot of people that say they don't get the games now. And I guess these are just people that used to have cable and maybe got rid of cable. And whatever they're doing with streaming, they haven't gotten the app or done the Bally Sports thing separately. Because ultimately what people have done is, as they leave cable, is they buy things a la carte. They buy Netflix, they get on Hulu or something, and they just kind of pick and choose what they consume. And I feel like some of these Royals games are falling through the cracks with some of these people. And it's not your best fans, for lack of a better term. Those people are, if you're just like an avid Royals fan, like me and my mom and people like that, you're going to have the games. I'm just talking about the exposure to other people that maybe would find a game interesting, or maybe only watch a couple of games a week, but you can also sell tickets to them and it adds to the audience. I feel like some of those people are getting missed right now.
Well, I don't know all the ins and outs of this. You might know more than I do, but when people began to cut the cord, as they say, there were other options to watch the games. And I think for free, like Hulu and YouTube, and there are other places to go and you're able to watch the games. And I don't know if it was free, because I haven't gone that route yet. I don't know if it was free or if it was just the charge was low. And then when the rights holders in Major League Baseball began to see the value in this and negotiated with them, in many markets, there was no deal. And so now you have Royals fans who have decided they don't want cable, they don't want satellite, and now what they used to use to watch the Royals is not available. As opposed to, when Bally's took over for Fox and there was some difficulty negotiating with the cable companies and the satellite companies, that's one thing. But there just seems to be a deadlock right now with certain teams and their rights holders and the online streaming platforms that they're able to use before. So nothing against the other platforms, but if there's just a central platform, and it's very simple. If you want to watch your team home and away with no blackouts, and you want to be able to stream it on your phone and on your tablet and on your television, here it is. And here's what it costs. And you don't get 17 other channels that come along that you don't care about in order to get your team. If this is what you want, this is what it's going to cost.
That's right. Yep. And that's the way younger people are consuming. It's all a la carte. They pick what they like and go with it. The other thing that people are talking about is, and we've seen John Sherman and many with the Royals discussing over the last few months, the possibility of a new downtown stadium. The Chiefs made some comments over the weekend as well in this regard. The first thing they've said, they actually said that their preference is to put hundreds of millions of dollars, if not more, into the current Arrowhead. But a lot of it has to do with infrastructure and stuff like that. I think most people were thinking if the Royals build downtown, they might, raise Kauffman Stadium and the Chiefs would build on that site. What can you tell us about how this is all going to come together, or what you think would be the right move for the Royals?
Well, I get this question not only in Kansas City, but on our last road trip, we were in New York, and it was the first time we had seen the Yankees, and just talking to their announcers, and they just love Kauffman Stadium. And what's this business about building a new stadium? How can you leave Kauffman Stadium? And And I run into fans all the time about how can you leave Kauffman Stadium? We love Kauffman Stadium. Everybody loves Kauffman Stadium. And I can tell you that nobody wants to leave Kauffman Stadium. But the reality is for us to compete in the industry that we're in, the team needs to find more ways to generate revenue that's exclusive to them. And the model that everyone's chasing now is one that started in St. Louis with Ballpark Village. And if you've been to St. Louis and you're sitting somewhere near home plate and you're looking out across the field and the seats in the outfield, there's a structure and you really have to focus your eyes on it because it looks like it's part of the stadium. And it's called Ballpark Village. It's built with the same brick that Busch Stadium was built with. And there are seats and there are windows and there's signage boards and there's digital boards. And it just looks like an extension of the ballpark, but it's across the street. And it's a big piece of property that the Cardinals own. And over time, it's been developed with office buildings, high-rise office buildings, high-rise apartment buildings, restaurants, bars, parking, you name it. I mean, it's just this huge block, entertainment block. And what was brilliant is that because it's across the street, the Cardinals have to share very little of that revenue with Major League Baseball's revenue sharing program. They keep most of that money. Now, I just learned this year that the seats that face the ballpark are sold to be able to watch the game. So that has to be shared. And the signage boards that are used on television to advertise and to the fans in the ballpark, that has to be shared. But everything else in there belongs to the Cardinals. The Braves have done the same thing with their area. And that's just exploded. The Rangers are still in the process of building around their new ballpark. So this is a way for the Royals to make a contribution to downtown, create an entertainment district, a destination place for people that don't live in Kansas City or around Kansas City. But if they want to drive, you know, 3, 4, 5 hours and come watch some games over the weekend, there's going to be added hotels, restaurants, bars, whatever, around the ballpark. And the development, the team hopes, will be not only good for the city, but it could be profitable for the Royals and help make up some of those margins where they fall short against some of the larger market teams. And, you know, Mr. Sherman in his philanthropic spirit also understands that there's a greater need in Kansas City for some, you know, some lower income housing. And so the development is not just all about let's make money for the Royals, but one of the development models that I've seen is that there's adjacent properties around the ballpark, wherever we land, that is also going to be good for the city and for the citizens of the city. So it's a huge project, and I was part of the first town hall meeting when the master plan was unveiled, and there were several members of the media there, and I got to MC it, which was a great thrill because I've never done anything like that. And I was just like everybody else. I was wondering what they were going to do and what it was going to cost. And the first number that came out was a $2 billion project, $1 billion for the stadium, $1 billion for the development around it. And I understand, you know, public money and subsidizing wealthy owners and the Royals are having a very bad year this year. I mean, I get it, but this notion that the public is going to flip the bill for a $2 billion project is just not accurate. I mean, the majority of this money is going to be privately financed, and the tax is going to be an extension of the one that that exists right now that keeps Kauffman Stadium and Arrowhead looking the way that it has all these years. So, I mean, those details are coming out slowly but surely. But the answer to your question is this is the model. And the Royals want to get in on this model sooner rather than later.
Right.
Because I know since I've been here and you're from here and I've been here for 25 years, I can think of a couple times, Kevin, where somebody has gone out to the Truman Sports Complex and done a very extensive study about making an entertainment district out there. Do you build hotels around Kauffman Stadium and Arrowhead Stadium? Do you put restaurants on the premises, bars, so that it becomes that kind of a destination point? And the data that kept coming back was that, yeah, on game day, that might be nice. But on a Tuesday night when the Royals are in Cleveland, is anyone going to drive out to the Truman Sports Complex and have dinner or go to a bar and watch the game? And I think the answer just came back that the answer is just no, it's not going to happen. And we're just in such a unique situation compared to the Chiefs, because I think you know, I hope the Chiefs stay there. But we all know that the Chiefs could go anywhere, and most people will drive there every other Sunday and spend the day and watch the Chiefs. We need to find a way to get people to come out to the ballpark on a Tuesday when school is in session. And if you can create an entertainment district, you know, when the Royals are out of town on a Tuesday, will people still drive there and have dinner and go to a bar and watch the game? They can't see it in person, but they're going to watch the game. So that's a really long answer to your short question, but I think that's just what we're confronted with right now. But the main message being, this has nothing to do with wanting to leave Kauffman Stadium. It's just the
right.
The reality of the financial situation. And Kauffman Stadium is the sixth oldest stadium in the major leagues right now. And some of the, you know, the last renovation was sweet and adding the Royals Hall of Fame and the bar and all that stuff. Now you're talking about stuff that's going on underneath the stadium.
Right.
So those are much bigger renovations, and you just have to ask yourself, how much money do you want to spend there to fix up something that is the sixth oldest ballpark in the major leagues, or just build something completely new?
Well, I was outspoken then, and I'm outspoken now. Downtown's the place to be. I don't think the Royals should have renovated when they did. I thought that was the time to move downtown. The Pirates had just opened a stadium that I think cost $220 million to build. And I've not been there, but everybody that's been to that ballpark says that it is just phenomenal how great that spot is in Pittsburgh. But that's water under the bridge. That happened. We knew this was going to come down the pike just a few years later after the renovation. The Royals eventually were going to want to or need to go downtown. I support that fully. And if it's only continuing the 3/8 of a cent sales tax, I think voters will say, okay, this is not a new tax. We'll do that. But I haven't heard anybody definitively say that's the only tax that's going to be involved here. Have you? Is it your understanding that it's that and nothing else, and the Royals are somehow going to finance the rest of it? Or is there going to be a state initiative? Is there going to be another vote for another chunk of money that would get split between the Royals and the Chiefs? I haven't heard that detail, but I'll tell you right now, from people I hear from, people are spending a lot of money right now because eggs are expensive, bread's expensive, and I don't think it's a great time to be asking voters for money. Is that sales tax the only thing, as you understand it, that the Royals want?
As I understand it, I don't know how the state gets involved, but I think as far as Jackson County goes, that's the extent of the sales tax.
Okay, good enough. Well, I thought it was interesting that the Chiefs finally spoke out. I kind of felt bad for the Royals. They're like, man, the Chiefs are so silent on this thing. They're just letting the Royals go out there and make all the noise and fall on the sword, you know, because everybody's waiting. What's it going to cost the taxpayers? That's what we're all waiting for. What's it going to cost us? And now the Chiefs have finally spoken out. And I was really surprised to hear them say their preference is to do all the foundation work, the infrastructure work, and stay at the current Arrowhead. I was very surprised to hear that. Were you?
I mean, in the big picture, no, I'm not, because, I mean, that's just a great spot. I mean, and again, I mean, especially with the way the Chiefs are playing right now, I mean, they could go anywhere and people are going to go. And there are plenty of open spaces in Kansas City that if they wanted to create their own spot or just use it for leverage, you know, there are options all over the place. But at the same time, Arrowhead's a great stadium. The parking is great. You have two major interstates. I mean, all things considered, you get in and out of there pretty good compared to other places. And I had heard what you had heard too about, you know, maybe a new Arrowhead right where Kauffman Stadium is right now, because you don't lose any parking spots while you're building the new stadium. You can use Arrowhead up until the very end. But we know our needs. They know their needs. And if that's what they want to do, then it sure helped. Like, as you said, it sure helps us to know what they want to do, because, you know, the two stadiums and the two teams are tied together when it comes to the sales tax.
Okay, so the Royals are having a really rotten season, Ryan. We're not going to sit here and break all that down. We won't. You do enough of that on a nightly basis. But I have noticed, and I don't know how much our listeners are all noticing other teams around baseball, but the Baltimore Orioles are very surprising to me. They're 20-some games over 500 and leading their division. The Brewers are good. The Reds are good. The Reds were terrible a couple of years ago. The Diamondbacks are better. The Rangers are in first place. It almost feels like a new cycle of teams are playing pretty well. Now they got to close the deal. There's a lot of season left here, but these were teams that were losing a lot, like the Royals, and they look like they've turned around pretty quickly. Can the Royals draw anything from looking at what those franchises are doing? Do you see any similarities, and would you have some hope that maybe the Royals in a couple years could turn this thing around in a fairly dramatic way?
Well, I'm as curious as you are, because I look at those teams, and just to add some numbers to the teams you're talking about, I mean, you've got Baltimore. 2 years ago, they lost 110 games. And now, you know, they're in first place in a really good division as far as talent and money goes. Arizona is a surprising team. They're four games out, or, you know, within striking distance of the Dodgers. 2 years ago, they lost 110 games. Cincinnati is, you know, chasing the Brewers, and they've turned the corner. They lost 100 games last year in the National League East. Miami has fallen off recently, and nobody's going to catch Atlanta, but they lost 93 games. So then to your question, you know, can the Royals do the same thing? Most of those teams that I just described were criticized by media, the Players Association, their own fans, and rightly so when you have a season like that, for, you know, so-called not trying to compete or tanking or whatever. And I don't know the motivation behind those teams, but what they all did is they had a group of young players, and they committed to those players. And there's nothing that beats experience. And there are different theories out there as to how many at-bats does it take until a player really feels like they know who they are, and they know the game, and they know whether they can compete or not. How many at-bats does it take for the organization to make a decision as to whether they're going to help them in the future or not? I don't know what that is. I haven't studied the numbers, so I'll just trust other people's judgment. But what those teams did is they committed to those players, and they played them. And they figured out who could play, who couldn't play. And then over time, they, like the Royals did in 2013, when they went out and traded for James Shields and Wade Davis, and decided, okay, let's start bringing some winning players in here and trying to get to the next level. So what I like about that and how it ties into the Royals is, who are your core players, and let's play them, because nothing beats experience. And you and I have lived through many, many Royal seasons in the past where there was this feeling of rebuilding and trying to compete at the same time. And two things go wrong when you go that route. Number one, you accomplish neither. In the end, you neither competed nor did you rebuild. And the worst part of it is when you get to the off season and into the following spring training, and you still don't know if a guy can play because he only played 91 games because he was protected, or there was a veteran that needed some playing time. So in respect to him, that the younger player lost some experience. And so there's this perpetual rebuild of, you never get to a point where you know if a guy can play or not because he hasn't played a full season. So yeah, there are times where I'd look at the lineup card and I think, man, is this guy playing again? Or are they going to send this guy down? Whatever. They know way more than I do. And many times I'm just a fan like everybody else and just working on emotion and not thinking about the bigger picture. But they're going to stick with these guys, and they're either going to sink or they're going to swim. And then you hope that there's a James Shields trade down the road where you find a veteran that's at a point in his career where he's won, and he can bring a new edge and he can bring a new attitude to a team, and it helps them get to the next level. But that's what I've seen from those teams, is you ride it out. There's no guarantee that it's going to work. When the Royals went and got James Shields, it was after the 2012 season. That was the first full season that the guys who won the World Series by and large played in the major leagues. They had experience. Dayton Moore decided, okay, we've been building to borrow a comparison to a house. Okay, we've put enough concrete down for a foundation. Now we need to start putting some walls up. We need to start building upward now. And that was the beginning of a great thing in Kansas City. So that's what I see when I look at those teams, and yeah, and why they've been able to turn the corner as quickly as they have is because they committed to them. They rode them out for a couple of years instead of giving them some playing time here and playing time there and getting stuck in a, you know, perpetual no man's land.
I think what would excite me and what fascinates me about this is it's not just one or two teams doing this. It's a handful of teams that have done this in very quick order. And the Royals was more gradual. You know, you mentioned the Shields trade, and it felt like, you know, that group of players had been around about 4 or 5 years by the time I remember sitting there talking in 14 at the All-Star break about firing Ned Yost. I mean, we didn't know what it was. And then they got in the wild card game. Then they made that great run to the World Series, came back the next year and were absolute world beaters. I mean, but it didn't flip overnight. It felt like it was kind of a methodical, well-planned execution. These seem faster, and I don't, you know, the Yankees are a good team this year, but they're in last place in their division. And I'm just fascinated by teams like the Orioles and Arizona, these teams that have lost all these games and they're winning and they did it fairly quickly. If we're not in some sort of an era or time in Major League Baseball where, I hate to use this word, where maybe this is just easier to do now than it's been for last. Ryan, I think for like 30 years, I was always told it's impossible to improve your record by 10 games. Like only three teams a year or something in Major League Baseball would ever be 10 games better than the year before. Well, we're talking about teams improving their record by 30 games here. I mean, just remarkable turnarounds. Does this maybe signify an era we could be in?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. I mean, I think the more teams do this, the more they'll be willing to try it and are willing to shut out all the noise around them about, you know, not trying and you know, the lottery system didn't work for the Royals this past year. I mean, they were supposed to pick fifth, and because of the lottery, they picked eighth. So there are some safeguards in there that you can't just completely tank a season. And then over time, you're going to, you know, your fans aren't going to be interested anymore, and players aren't going to want to go play there. So if you go into that mode, there has to be a light at the end of the tunnel, or, you know, you're just going to be buried forever. And then there are teams like Tampa Bay that just have a formula. They have a type of player that they're looking for. And once that player gets into the system, they flourish like they never have before. And then when they get to a certain level of success, the Rays trade them and flip them for someone else. And they just kind of keep this thing rolling along. So there's the combination of, and this is where, in my opinion, analytics, we get so caught up in analytics and trying to decide, you know, why a team's winning and why a team's losing or whatever. But the fascinating part of analytics to me is how teams can identify a player with a skill set that nobody else notices. And you bring him in and you convince him, this is what you do well. This is what the data shows. We want you to focus on these pitches if you're a pitcher, these swings if you're a hitter. And they flourish and they blossom. And so the combination of rebuilding and going and committed to a deep rebuild where you truly are rebuilding, you have to have some big prospects come along. The Orioles have had a couple, Gunnar Henderson and Adley Rutschman. The Reds, part of their turnaround is this Ellie De La Cruz getting to the big leagues, Corbin Carroll for the Diamondbacks. I mean, there is a young player there that everyone kind of rallies around, and hopefully, you know, one of our young guys will be something like that. But then just being really smart about what's your style of play, who's out there that can help you. And then you create this machine that you just, you know, it's, you know, you put the next token in the machine and the machine just keeps running. So, that's where I think the team is right now is, hey, this is not good. There are a lot of games being lost. There are a lot of games that have been given away lately in the later innings, but they're gaining experience. They're assessing the market, who can come and help us. And then there comes a time where you say, okay, we got a couple of young guys here that other teams want. Maybe we need to trade them to get someone in here like a James Shields and Wade Davis that can make us better. In the case of the Royals, overnight. I mean, the Royals went from 90 losses in 2012 to 10 games over 500 in 2013.
Yeah. Okay, I've been saving this one. I've been waiting for a few weeks to get this one and get your thoughts on this. I love this story, and I just want to know your thoughts. I've been following this all year. A couple months ago, Mookie Betts is in they're playing at Milwaukee. And he does not want to stay at the team hotel with his teammates. And he rents an Airbnb and stays by himself because in Milwaukee, they were staying at the Pfister Hotel, which everyone in Major League Baseball says is a haunted hotel. And there's all kinds of stories of weird things. Some people have claimed to have seen something that looks like a ghost, but TVs flip on and off. The lights do. The hotel was built in the 1800s. Okay. This is like an old historic property. Last month, Brent Rooker, the A's, Ryan, was there. And he said his television kept turning on and off. And then the channels would change, and it just had a completely like a mind of its own, and he couldn't figure out or understand what it was. And he said, listen, if the ghosts want to change my channel here, that's fine, as long as they don't do anything else to me in this room. But there are people in baseball that are absolutely convinced the Pfister Hotel in Milwaukee is haunted. Have you been there? Have you heard stories? What is up with the Pfister Hotel in Milwaukee?
Well, we stayed there this year. And first of all, there's two parts to the Pfister Hotel. There is the so-called old part of the hotel, and there's the newer part of the hotel. And as you'd imagine, the ghost stories come from the old part of the hotel.
Yes.
And so you kind of have to roll the dice, because the newer part of the hotel, the rooms are nice. There are no bad rooms in our major league travels, but the old part have the big grand rooms, and they're bigger, and they have the fancy furniture or whatever. But yeah, I mean, you take the risk of having an encounter with a ghost. And I don't know. There've been a few stories over the years where someone claims that they've seen something, but mostly what I've heard is what you just described. And we had a member of our traveling party this year that, didn't get on the bus, with a pale face and claiming they had seen a ghost, but had left the bedroom portion of his hotel room and went to the bathroom. And when he came back, something he swore had been moved on his desk, like significantly moved, like something like, his computer was folded on the desk. And when he came up, it was like opened up and his wallpaper was on the computer as if someone had opened it when he was in there. And the television coming on, that's the most common one, is the TVs coming on. But it's just mostly furniture moving around, things moving around, electronics being turned on. It doesn't creep me out when I go there. My mom's side of the family is from Wisconsin, so I think that gives me some sort of like haunted immunity, because I think most people that have the ghost sightings don't have any kind of Wisconsin roots. I do, so I think therefore they just kind of leave me alone because I'm one of them. But yeah, these stories go way, way back. But personally for me, it's more funny than anything else. Yeah. I've never had any experiences there.
Well, Mookie Betts was awesome. He said, I don't believe in ghosts. I'm not afraid of ghosts. I just don't want a reason to ever believe in them or be afraid of them. So I'm renting a house and not staying there. I'm like, well, that didn't make any sense, but I loved it.
Yeah. Well, he can afford it. So I'm guessing it was a really nice Airbnb.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the other part of the story. He was afraid of the ghost, but it got him out of a hotel room, and he probably had some, beautiful 2 or 3 bedroom house in Milwaukee overlooking the lake.
Yeah. 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 I just don't put Milwaukee and Airbnb together. I don't know what it is. I can't imagine that there's a big market for those in Milwaukee.
Which means he probably got a really nice place.
Yeah. A really good deal. I don't know if you saw this one last week. It was on this Netflix series. Patrick Mahomes was talking with Jalen Hurts before the Super Bowl, like 3 days before the Super Bowl at one of the media events last year. And he said, how's your hotel or something like that? And they were talking about their family. He goes, yeah, I got my family. They're only 6 minutes away from our hotel. I got a real nice house. And Jalen Hurts said to Mahomes, I'll bet that costs a lot. Mahomes says, no, I got it 3 months ago. It was really cheap. Like he bought it. He rented a house for the Super Bowl 3 months before the Super Bowl. And I thought, okay, even the really rich guys can be a little frugal every now and then. I like that.
Yeah, and the fact that he knew he'd be in the Super Bowl in 3 months.
Yeah.
I love that part of the story.
Or he'd just eat it. If you don't make it, I guess you eat it is the way you go.
Right.
Ryan, great stuff. How are you and your family doing? Everybody doing good?
We're doing well. On the last road trip, Sarah brought our oldest son, Micah, to New York. And they went and saw a Broadway show. We went out to dinner one night. They came to a game one night. We got to ride the subway. We walked around Times Square. And so as they get older and are easier to travel with, it makes the travel somewhat more bearable when they get to experience what I get to experience on the road. And then my boys come out to the ballpark occasionally. They'll ride out with me and get there early while I'm doing my work, and they'll bring their gloves and they'll go out and try and catch home run balls during batting practice. And then we'll have dinner together before the game, and then off they go. And I call the game, and then we drive home afterwards, and I get to hear all the little adventures that they got into around the stadium. And so as they get older and I can involve them more, it really helps because that's a that's a heavy lift for Sarah when I hit the ballpark and she's got all four of them, whether I'm home, you know, because when I'm home, I leave at 2:30 in the afternoon. So she has them the rest of the day and the evening. And I'm not there to help out with dinner. I'm not there to help out with bedtime during school. I'm not there to help out with homework. So I'm home, but not really home. So the fact that they can be more involved now helps all of us.
Well, you cherish every moment that you have them around and at the ballpark and around your work. That is great stuff, man. I know you're just an awesome dad and a really cool family. And I love catching up with you and talking about things. And I think you and I share an optimism. We won't get too deep into any of this really here today, but we share an optimism that some of the things that ail our society are things that we see that are so negative and prevalent these days. We were talking about the movie, The Sound of Freedom, which I've not seen yet. I'm going to see it later this week with a friend, but the fact that so many Christians have flocked to the movie theaters to see this thing and the important work and message that needs to be out, it's just phenomenal. I sense that underneath the surface somewhere, all these people that we know are good people. And I do believe most people are good. I think they're just looking for or craving a reason to speak about that, to take action about that. I think it's coming. I think we've got better days ahead. Just generally speaking, I do. I think you and I share that optimism.
Well, my pastor said something months ago that really helped me with myself and the way that I treat people, that we may not agree on certain issues or we may not agree on faith, period. And that his feeling was that the people who really struggle with showing grace are probably people that haven't experienced grace. No one's really showed them grace, whether it's grace from God, grace from their Christian faith, or just grace from friends and family. And so if people don't know what grace feels like, it's very hard to show it. And so I think our job as Christians is to do what we're called to do. We've been shown tremendous grace, and that's not just something that we take selfishly and say, thank you for that grace. It's to be shared. And so I agree with you. I think there's no worse feeling. I know for me, when I was going through my depression in 2005, or, you know, if it's a political activist or whatever someone's cause is, that feeling of that nobody cares, you know, that I'm the only one that cares about this. If there's racial tension between two different races, that one feels that the other one just doesn't care. And I've just learned that by listening and hearing that people have different life experiences that I do. And it's hard. First of all, I'm commanded to not judge other people's hearts. And at the same time, as a human being, I just know the reality is I have not lived the same life that other people have. But what I can do is I can listen, I can show grace, I can try and learn and let them know that I care. And I've never shared this before, but during some of the protests a few summers ago, there's a player he was with the Mets at that time, Dominic Smith. And now he plays for the Washington Nationals. And there was another police incident with a black man, and there was a riot that ensued and whatever. It's just another incident in our country during that summer. And I've read about Dominic Smith, and just seems like a really great young man who grew up in Los Angeles. And so I have that connection with him. I've never met him. And he was at the podium, and he was just in tears, and he could hardly speak. And all that could come out of his mouth was, sometimes it just seems like nobody cares. And that just hurt my heart to just think that, you know, wherever he stands on racial injustice and racial unity and Black Lives Matter or whatever, that was just the raw emotion of just like, it just feels like people don't care. And my boys collect baseball cards, not like they used to, but man, I got baseball cards all over my house. They're in the garage, they're in their room, they're on the stairs, they're in the basement. And because of my faith, I believe that there are no accidents, things happen. But for whatever reason, I was touched by that. And the next day I went to my truck, and there was a baseball card on the floor of my truck in the back seat, face down. And I picked it up, and it was a Dominic Smith baseball card. And I put it in my wallet, and I still have it in my wallet to this day. And it's just a reminder to me that I've been shown tremendous grace in my Christian faith. And every time I grab some money or get something from my wallet, there's that Dominic Smith baseball card. And it's just a reminder to me, you know, do I really care? The people around me who just feel forgotten and no one's listening and are without grace, am I listening? Am I talking to them? Am I showing them that I care? I think that's the best that I can do.
That is beautiful. You are something else, my friend. I can't thank you enough for your time, as always. And that was you impart so much wisdom on me. I'm so thankful for our conversations. And as always, just wish you the very best. I know it's going to be some dog days here down the stretch with the way this season has gone, but I'll still be watching. Know I'm there, and keep up the great work.
All right. Thank you, Kevin. Good to talk with you.
Thank you, sir. All right. He is Ryan Lefevre. That's just as good as it gets. He's just such a he's a profound person. That's what he is. He's just profound and very wise. And I really love chatting with Ryan about all the different topics, but certainly life. We had a long text thread last week that was really deep. I'm not going to share any of it with you, but it was just really personal and deep and profound. And I think the older we get, the more we feel good about things like that. And that is a man every day that wakes up and makes the world a better place. That's what I can tell you about Ryan Lefevre. He makes the world a better place every single day and sets out to do just that. Hope you enjoyed it. I always appreciate chatting with Ryan about all the great things going on in broadcasting, in baseball, and maybe some better days for the Royals are just ahead. His appearance today brought to you by Back 9 Development, online at back9development.com, your custom home builder in Kansas City, Lawrence, Topeka, or Manhattan. Call 785-236-0161 for back9development.com. 360 Document Solutions, copiers, printers, voice over IP, phone systems. You know what? They service everything they sell, which is different than those big corporations. If you have a business in Missouri, Kansas, or Oklahoma, 360 Document Solutions can help you and your team save money and lose the headaches of when your equipment breaks and you don't know what to do or who to call. Call Mark at 913-745-5344 and give an opportunity to earn your business. 360documentsolutions.com. And Brad and his team at the New Car Image. This is your personal concierge for your automobiles. Whether you have a fleet at work, whether it's your personal automobile, if you're busy, they can get it tagged for you. They can do they'll do everything, not just detailing services, which they're phenomenal at. That's their main business. But they also are like a personal concierge. They'll go to the DMV for you. They'll, if you're busy, they'll do it for you. TheNewCarImage.com. One-stop call to maintain your vehicle. Cleaning, servicing, licensing, the whole thing. But right now, through the end of this week only, through the end of July, he's giving away the free ceramic coating if you do the full interior detail. That's a $300 to $500 value depending on the size of your vehicle. It is added absolutely free on just the regular detail service, interior detail. TheNewCarImage.com, 816-499-1470. Hope you enjoyed it. That was Ryan Lefevre. It is always fun talking with our friend. We appreciate you joining us each and every time here at KKHI. Don't forget to hit that like, follow, or subscribe button, or tell a friend somewhere when you bump into him that you think Kevin Kietzman has issues.
Thanks for listening to Kevin Kietzman Has Issues, presented by Roberts Robinson Chevrolet Buick GMC. To get exclusive patrons-only podcasts, receive a weekly newsletter, and attend in-person patrons-only parties, visit kkhasissues.com and become a patron today. This has been a production of Crooked Tail Media Incorporated.